Today, we're going to embark on a real adventure in the southwestern republic of Kabardino-Balkaria. It's a mountainous region in the Caucasus, popular among nature lovers for its absolutely breathtaking views, but also among adrenaline junkies for its extreme sport. So let's get stuck in. Tengiz, nice to meet you. This valley is absolutely breathtaking. Where are we now? What makes it so unique?
We're in a unique area of the Central Caucasus, the Bezengi Gorge. This region is connected to the highest mountain range in the Caucasus, Russia, and Europe, the Bezengi Wall. It's a section of the Greater Caucasus Range, and nearby there are six mountains over 5,000 meters high. People call this place a mountaineer's paradise. Some even refer to it as the Russian Himalayas. I suggest we take the off-road vehicle and get a bit closer, walk around and take a good look close up.
Perfect, let's go. What does Bezengi mean, Tengiz?
The name Bezengi comes from the word buz or boz, meaning ice in Turkic. It can be interpreted as the place where the ice has retreated or where there was once a glacier. True to its name, Bezengi has a massive concentration of ice. We're actually standing in the ancient bed of a glacier right now. You can see traces of glaciation all around. The main glacier here, Uluçıran, or the Bezengi Glacier, has retreated more than 1.5 kilometers over the past 60 years.
Really? So it was here before?
Yes, when the Bezengi mountaineering camp was established 60 years ago, the glacier was very close. People say that Kitchen used to store meat in the glacier's crevices, as there was no electricity. And slowly, the glacier receded and shrank. But it's still the most extensive glacier in Russia and Europe.
Amazing. And is it true that sometimes the Caucasus region is called the Russian Himalayas?
Yes, people call this place the Russian Himalayas or the Lesser Himalayas because, as I mentioned, it's home to six mountains over 5,000 meters high. And the difficulty ratings for climbing routes here range from the first to the sixth category. This area is known as a mecca for mountaineering. It's an incredible region. For decades, it has been the heart of Russian mountaineering, where the unique Soviet tradition was preserved with some of the best Soviet training techniques and methods now enhanced with modern approaches. That's why this climbing camp is considered one of the best in Russia and across the region. Now I'll show you another spot nearby, known to tourists as the Troll's Tongue.
Let's do it. So this is the Troll's Tongue. It even looks a bit similar to the one in Norway, and it shares the same name. Can't be a coincidence.
We're in the Caucasus, not Scandinavia. There have never been any trolls here. This is an area with a long history of human settlements. It is called Upper Khulam. It's one of the oldest settlements in Kabardino-Balkaria, dating back to the early Middle Ages. This place is closely tied to the origins, emergence, and development of the Balkar people. This very cliff is called Deolesirk, meaning Giant's Elevation or Giant's Ridge. According to ancient ancient legends, giants once lived here, known as Deule or Emigen, and it was here that they would gather. And this rock we're standing on, it's like a giant's tooth. That's its real name.
That's a better name, I think.
Exactly. The giant's tooth.
I like that. I'm going to call it that.
Yes, no trolls. Giants. And look at the amazing panorama we get from up here.
It's amazing.
Nature and history are inseparable here. You can't separate the two because everywhere you look, there are traces of human presence. Those ancient terraces, they're thousands of years old. You can see early medieval settlements, the remains of fortifications, towers, and fortresses scattered across the valley. It's an incredible place that's drawn people here for a very long time. As the day winds down, we're wrapped in the gorgeous sunset of the Bezengi Wall on the main Caucasian range. I think it's been a beautiful and memorable day. Tomorrow, how about we head to another gorge to see new places and continue our journey through Kabardino-Balkaria?
Sounds great to me, and I've certainly worked up an appetite as well. Tengiz, it's called the dry lake for obvious reasons, although if it keeps raining like this, it won't be dry for very long. Where did all the water go?
I feel like joking. It's like tourists drank all the water here back in the day. But in reality, this is a classic karst lake. This basin is the sinkhole of a karst lake that was once over 180 meters deep and filled with water. But karst is a soft material, it changes quickly. One theory claims the water flowed into the lower lake, leaving this unique natural landmark behind. You can practically see it in a cross-section here, showcasing both the karst lake and the layers from the ancient Tethys Ocean.
Yeah, you can see the layers.
Exactly.
Now, I've been told that when there was water here, that any object or animal that fell in it would disappear without a trace. Do you know anything about that?
Mountains are like that. You start out with sunshine, and by the time you get there, it's raining. You always have to be ready. A traveler has to be prepared for changing weather. But the rain won't ruin our mood. The legend more likely pertains to the lower lake, since that's where there's still water. But if something or someone were to fall down here, they'd be searching for a long time too. In fact, this spot has been attracting extreme tourism for a while now. Bungee jumpers leap down here, rock climbers come to practice on the cliffs. And I'll tell you more, I'll be coming here soon with my team of students. We'll rappel down and explore the lake bottom. But there's still a 9-meter deep lake below. Divers have gone down there too, but it's not yet proven if this sinkhole is isolated or connected to an underground water system. This lake still awaits its explorer.
Right, well, I don't think that's going to be me, Tengiz. Shall we get out of the rain?
Let's go.
I've heard that this is one of the most dangerous places in the whole of Kabardino-Balkaria. And it's easy to see why. We've got a sheer drop to the right of us. We've got a rockfall just behind us. I take it that's why this road is no longer in use.
Before they built the tunnel, this road was quite dangerous and a lot of people were afraid to drive it. Passengers would get out and follow the car on foot.
I don't blame them.
Exactly. Later, when they built the tunnel, cars stopped using this road, but it became a tourist attraction, and now every visitor to the gorge takes a stroll here. It's an incredibly beautiful gorge, almost a cross-section in rock layers. You've got a rocky ridge, stunning perspectives, pastures, alpine meadows. I think seeing such beauty is a real treat for someone coming up from the plains.
Yeah, it's dangerous, but certainly the views are worth it if you stay far back from the edge. What role does this gorge play in local beliefs, traditions, legends? I've heard that there are some treasures hidden deep inside the mountains here. Is that true?
The greatest treasure in these mountains is the people who live here. They settled in this region and have managed to survive under challenging conditions, creating a unique culture. And they continue to live here, rejecting modern comforts. They could have moved to the plains, but they chose to stay here. They love this area and can't imagine life anywhere else. These people are truly the mountains' greatest treasure.
Very poetic, Tengiz. Thank you. Now, seeing this stunning landscape from the ground is certainly one thing, but I bet it's way better up there. So we've come to Chegyem Gorge to get a bird's eye view from a paraglider. So wish me luck. What a perfect way to relax after such a thrilling experience and calm down by the pool, Marat. Now tell me, what made you choose Chegyem Gorge as a place to set up shop here, apart from the amazing surroundings, of course?
Why is this area so good for paragliders? Why is it such a perfect spot to fly? We're in the Chegyem Gorge, which starts at the Chegyem Waterfalls. The land heats up and air currents rise up the gorge.
So you get the thermals.
Right. And Mount Zinki is perfectly situated to catch them. The main current flows up the gorge, creating a steady updraft of 4 to 8 meters per second. That's a comfortable wind speed, just right for taking off and flying. There are perfect conditions for both beginners and experienced pilots. Those who are skilled enough to fly far up the gorge, even crossing from one gorge to another.
Mm-hmm. So the surroundings, the weather conditions, they're what make this place so popular as a paragliding spot. But from what countries do people travel here to paraglide?
People travel into this place from Turkey, Iran, France, Germany, from all over Europe. Austria is a paragliding mecca, France too. To quote a German pilot, this is the only place where you actually keep going up after takeoff. In most places, you just take off to reach a certain altitude. Then you fly down, looking for air currents. But over here, you take off, go up 150 meters from the base, and after that, you keep climbing up in the air.
Now, what sort of challenges do these surroundings pose to pilots, and have you ever had any hairy moments yourself?
There is a saying among paragliders, a good pilot is an old pilot. A professional who, when he sees that the weather conditions are poor, cancels the flight. Look over there, the pilots are flying around that mountain peak, and here too, at the foot of the mountain. They're about to take off to that ridge over there. Each slope, each mountain has its own wind patterns, its own aerodynamics. Different slopes are shaded. Different areas have air swirls, or so-called rotor areas. Places where cold and warm air flows mix together. Paragliding is the safest activity in the air as long as you follow all the safety precautions, and as long as the weather conditions are within the norm.
Of course. And you've mentioned that anyone can paraglide as long as their health permits. So are there no restrictions in terms of age?
Let me tell you about that. A lot of it comes down to weather conditions. If the wind speed is between 3 and 5 meters per second, you can take a lightweight passenger, say a 10-year-old child. 25 to 50 kilograms. So if there's a stable breeze, no more than 8 meters per second, we can take passengers of that weight or of that age. But if the winds are stronger, we take heavier passengers, up to 130 kilograms. By the way, since you mention age, just a few days ago we set a world record. A 104-year-old man called Aslan Gabayev flew here.
104.
He is now the oldest passenger of a paramotor.
Amazing.
That flight took place right here, and we've got the record officially registered. Next year, if things go well, we want to break that record again. So there are no age restrictions, as long as you're healthy. But there are weight limits. We don't take passengers below 15 to 20 kilograms or above 130 kilograms. But in the range between 20 and 130, there are no restrictions, apart from good health.
Uh-huh. And the desire to do it.
And the desire, yes.
And what's the maximum altitude one of these paragliders can reach?
The record distance anyone has flown here is from this place all the way to Mount Elbrus and back. The Elbrus Gorge is next to this one. The first record set here was in 2014 by pilot Vitaly Galechuk. He flew a distance of 130 kilometers.
Really?
At a height of 4,600 meters. The next record was set by a group of pilots in 2021 in very favorable conditions. They too flew to Elbrus and back. Another record flight of note was through four gorges all the way to Dargavs in Ossetia. The distance was 140 kilometers, and the pilot landed there after navigating six gorges. To make these high-altitude, long-distance flights, you've got to have perfect weather conditions. As long as the weather is nice and you've got an experienced pilot who knows their way around the mountains, there's no limit to what you can do.
So if I'd have wanted to today, weather conditions permitting, air traffic control permitting, I could have possibly gone to Georgia.
In theory, it is possible, provided that weather conditions are good. But you've got to do the paperwork first before you cross the border. So, theoretically, as long as the weather is perfect, you can do that.
Well, I've already had some amazing experiences and memories from this base. Thank you very much, Marat. Angela, I've heard this lake is as deep as the Eiffel Tower is tall. It's quite hard to imagine from where we're sitting at this moment. How far down does it really go?
As of today, the lake has a depth of 279 meters. It used to be even deeper when it was studied by Georgian scientists. Back then, it was 360 meters deep. The Eiffel Tower is slightly higher.
Mm-hmm. And why did the depth of the lake change?
Most likely, this has to do with the erosion of the lake walls. The rock is very soft here. This is a karst lake. The limestone is being eroded by the water, crumbling down onto the bedrock. It is also possible that human activity is affecting that process as well. Active construction work is a known factor.
Mm-hmm. Now, some locals have described this lake as bottomless, and we obviously know that's not the case, Angela, but how well studied has this lake been?
People from all across Russia come here because the lake doesn't freeze over. There are massive groundwater flows in this area, spring water, so you can dive all year round.
Mm-hmm. And I heard that I'm not the first Englishman to go into this lake.
Correct. You're not the first one. The first was a diver by the name of Martin Robson. He set a record going as deep as 209 meters.
I don't think that we will beat his record today.
Not a chance.
Okay, well, let's get ready.
This is your main mouthpiece for breathing, and this is the backup in case the main one fails or when you need to help someone else. Mm-hmm. Divers typically swim in pairs. You go with a buddy. This is part of the diving safety. When someone has a problem underwater, they can give a hand signal. And if necessary, we hand them our backup mouthpiece.
Mm-hmm. And this is the sign?
This sign means there's a problem. This way we can talk underwater. This sign means there's a problem. Up, down, okay. Or say you look at your pressure gauge and you can gesture to your partner to let them know how much air you have left. This means 50, this is 100, and these are ones. So you can track everything.
Thank you, Angela.
Really happy.
Angela, you said that the water temperature here is around 9 degrees C, but it didn't seem to get any colder the deeper we went. Why is that?
The lake is spring-fed, so the water flows from underground. The inflow is very strong and the volume of water very large, so the lake doesn't freeze over. You can dive all year round, and the temperature is naturally maintained across the lake. Occasionally, the lake can become a turquoise white in color. It means that hydrogen sulfide is coming out. Hydrogen sulfide is released from the depths, and there's a distinctive foul odor, like something's rotting. But in recent years, this has been happening less and less often, and on most days, the lake is clear and odor-free.
So we're quite lucky today that we don't have this specific pong associated with this lake.
Yes, we are very lucky that we didn't have to deal with the smell.
Angela, thank you very much for such a wonderful experience today. Спасибо вам за необычный забываемый опыт сегодня.